trousers so hard, lifting me over all cross, right over the chilly Jordan, and there, somewhere in heaven city, I'll set me down all day. Day a crown of glory I'll shout and tell the happy story. My hard trials will soon be over, and I shall wear a crown.
Lord, I'm tired.
Hard trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Soon, my Lord, you're gonna come for me, then I'll be heaven bound. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over, and I shall wear a crown. The road I walk is often rugged, the load I bear is often heavy, but soon I know my feet shall stand upon higher ground. Higher ground each tear and care I leave behind me. I shout and say goodbye to trouble. My heart trials will soon be over, and I shall wear a crown. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Soon my Lord's gonna come for me, then I'll be heaven bound. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over, and I shall wear a crown. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Soon my Lord's gonna come for me, then I'll be heaven bound. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over. Our trials will soon be over, and I shall wear a crown.
Welcome to another Bible lesson today, brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. When Jesus was teaching his disciples how to pray, in Matthew chapter 6, verse 9, we read, "After this manner therefore pray ye, our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." To hold the name of God as being hallowed means to hold it in a certain amount of reverential awe and respect. And we see that today in our society, God's name is not held that way many times. We see people using this name in a vain way, in a frivolous way, in a non-serious way. And God certainly is displeased with this. We must hallow His name at all times, because His name is a holy name. We invite you to join us today in another Bible lesson.
Must I go empty-handed, thus my dear Redeemer meet? Not one day of service given, lay no trophy at His feet.
Must I go and empty-handed? Must I meet my Savior's soul?
Not one
soul with which to greet Him.
Must I
empty-handed go?
must I meet
my Savior's soul?
Not one
soul with which to greet him
must I
send.
As we continue our study in the book of Genesis, we're now ready to begin the 33rd chapter. In our last lesson, we just finished the 32nd chapter. There we had the story of Jacob wrestling with the Lord, and the Lord eventually giving him the blessing. And before we leave that chapter completely, I'd like to go back and read the last two verses of chapter 32, verses 31 and 32. And as he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the shrank. What he's saying here is that while Jacob was wrestling with the Lord, wrestling with this Lord in the figure of a man, he touched him in the hollow of his thigh, and he put his thigh out of joint. He put his hip out of joint. And as a result of that, we read that Jacob halted upon his thigh. That is, he had to walk with a limp. And some think that this was for the rest of his life, that he walked with this limp. And this was a sign then that God laid upon him to always cause him to remember this encounter that he'd had. Every day he would be forced to remember that he had met the Lord in this way, and that the Lord had touched him in such a way as to leave this permanent mark. This is also proof that Jacob could only prevail in this wrestling match if the Lord let him prevail, if the Lord gave him the strength to prevail, because the Lord had the strength to add a touch, put his thigh out of joint. And it reminds us in Galatians 6, verse 17, where the Apostle Paul said, "From henceforth let no man trouble me, for I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus." And so Jacob could say the same here. He bore in his body the mark of the Lord Jesus. And so in verse 32 is mentioned a traditional custom which the seed of Jacob had in remembrance of this, never to eat of that sinew or muscle of any beast which by the hip bone is fixed in his cup. Thus they preserved the memory of this story and gave reason for their children to ask questions about it so that they would know more about it and remember it. And they also did honor to the memory of Jacob by doing this. And today we may still make use of this. We today can acknowledge the mercy of God and our obligation to Jesus Christ without having to bear this same mark on our body. So as we move into chapter 33 of Genesis, we see that Jacob is preparing for his encounter with Esau. He had sent servants ahead to scout out the situation with Esau. And although Jacob's servants had reported back to him that Esau was coming, there is no actual indication that they'd actually talked with Esau. It's not even certain that Esau had even seen them. They had been so alarmed when they unexpectedly came upon Esau's large band of 400 men that they rushed back to Jacob without even stopping to make their presence known to Esau. So Esau may not have even known Jacob's intentions until he began encountering the droves of animals Jacob later began sending along as presents for Esau. Whatever his uncertainties may have been, they soon began to resolve themselves as the several shepherds accompanying the droves reported to him concerning Jacob. So he probably was looking forward to a reunion with his brother. Jacob, however, did not know what Esau would do. All he knew was that he was coming toward him with a large band of armed men, and that the last thing he'd ever heard about Esau was that 20 years before he had planned to kill him. So let's begin reading in chapter 33, verses 1 through 7. "And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and beheld Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel, and under the two handmaidens. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. And he passed over before them, and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him, and embraced him, and fell on his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes, and saw the women and the children, and said, Who are those with thee? And he said, The children which God hath graciously given thy servant. Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves. And Leah also with her children came near, and bowed themselves. And then came Joseph near, and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. So no sooner had Jacob returned to his family after his night of prayer, than he saw Esau and his army approaching in the distance. As one final precaution, Jacob arranged his wives and children in appropriate order, the 2 handmaids and their children first, then Leah and her children, then Rachel and Joseph. He may have done this so as to give the greatest amount of protection to those he loved most, but it's also possible that he did this just to have them meet Esau in an orderly manner. Jacob then proceeded ahead of them all to meet his brother. As was customary in those days, and some of the ancient writings record that when one was approaching a king that he always bowed 7 times when he did so, Jacob bowed low before Esau 7 times as he came near him. This was not intended as acknowledgement of being a servant on Jacob's part, but as a token of respect and recognition of Esau as the ruler of this region. Then an amazing thing happened. This must have been a great surprise to Jacob. Esau could restrain himself no longer. He ran forward to Jacob, hugging and kissing him in a free show of joyful reunion and reconciliation. He had long since realized that Jacob had properly been entitled to the birthright and blessing, and that God had chosen Jacob to be the inheritor of the promises, and he was reconciled to this fact. Esau may have even realized that he really wasn't properly cut out for that role in life. Now I find that Jacob no longer held into bitterness in his heart toward him, but that he earnestly desired to regain their lost fellowship, Esau was overjoyed. As for Jacob, this sudden outburst of affection and gladness, instead of the bitter encounter he'd been dreading for 20 years, was just too wonderful for words. For some time, neither brother could speak a word. They wept. God had indeed worked mightily, both to accomplish his own will and to do so in a way which brought joy and blessing to all concerned. Finally, when Esau noticed all the children and their mothers who had come up to them, he spoke, asking Jacob what relation these were to him. And Jacob then gave his testimony concerning the large family which God had blessed him with since he had last seen his brother. Each of his wives and their children came up to be introduced to their uncle and brother-in-law in the order Jacob had assigned to them, each showing full and proper respect. Jacob describes his family like this in verse 5, The children which God hath graciously given thy servant. Verse 8, And he said, What meanest thou by all this drove which I met? And he said, These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. So Esau, after seeing all of the family that Jacob had, and he saw a large part of his possessions that he had, now remember, they'd been divided into half, so he only saw half these possessions, and this reminded him then of all those cattle that he saw the day before that were in 5 different droves that he met, and he asked, What do you mean by this? What is the purpose of this? And Jacob said, These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord. These are presents for you. These are so that I can have good relations with you. It's to smooth over our relationship. And the customs of that day were for one to give a present to another, and the giving of the present showed the fact that they wanted to be friendly and on good terms, but the receiving of the present also showed the same thing. It showed just as much good faith to receive the present as it was to give the present. So verse 9, Esau says, I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself. So Esau kindly turns the offer down. He tries to make this as graceful as he possibly can. He says, I have enough. I don't need anything more. You keep what you have to yourself. Keep it for yourself. Verse 10, and Jacob said, "Nay, I pray thee, if now I find grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand. For therefore I have seen thy face as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me." So Jacob insists, keep the present. I want you to keep this present. This is a sign to me. It assures me that I found grace in your sight, that we're now friends. We're now brothers. We now can get along in peace and harmony. There is no enmity here. There is no hard feeling. There is forgiveness on the part of you toward me. And this is a token showing that this situation exists between us as I've described it. He says, when I saw your face, it was as though I'd seen the face of God. It was as though I realized now that God had worked this thing out. God has answered my prayer. This is what I've been longing for, wishing for, praying for, that our relationship would be a good relationship, that we would be brothers again, that we would be friends, that we'd be so that we could deal with each other on a basis of love toward each other. And so he says, so I've seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me. Your being pleased with me is one of the greatest things I want in my whole life right now. This is so important to me, so receive this blessing. So verse 11, he says, take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. So Jacob insists, take this blessing that I brought to you. Sure it's a gift, sure it's a blessing, sure it's of some value. I want it to be of some value, but I brought it to you. I want you to take it, and the reason is because God has dealt graciously with me. I'm not really losing anything here. I'm just kind of paying back some of the gracious dealings that God has had with me. Not only has God dealt graciously with me in my family and in all these possessions I have, but in reconciliation with you. This is a great blessing to me. This is the grace of God. And I want it, and that's happened. And he says, because I have enough. Now, in the King James Version, both Esau and Jacob are reported saying, I have enough. Verses 9 and verse 11. They both say, I have enough. But the Hebrew words are not the same. They're different. Actually, Esau said, I have much, R-A-B, Rab, whereas Jacob said, I have everything, K-O-L, coal. Esau may quite likely have had more actual possession than Jacob at this time, though Jacob had also been greatly blessed materially. But Jacob knew that, in the Lord, he had an inexhaustible resource. God had blessed him beyond measure, most of all now in this joyful meeting with his long-estranged twin brother, but he also was going to be blessed in the future as the patriarch of God's chosen people. Esau, realizing the sincerity of Jacob's motives, and also desiring there to be no question that he had also earnestly desired full reconciliation with his brother, and wanting to show he truly had forgiven his brother, he finally agreed to accept the gift. At the time of this joyful reunion, the two brothers no doubt spent quite a bit of time in telling each other all that had happened to them since they had separated so long ago. Esau also had a large family and great possessions, according to Genesis 36, 1-8. And he had undergone many experiences, which he shared with Jacob. Jacob no doubt told him all about Laban and how Laban had dealt with him, and Padan Aram, what kind of a country it was, and what his job had been there, and how God had led him through the years. Jacob was anxious to hear also about his mother and father, no doubt, and probably Esau told him about them, but for some reason, no further mention is made in Genesis about Rebekah or Isaac, except talking about their deaths and their burials. Genesis 35, verses 27-29, and Genesis 49, verses 31. And it's very likely that Rebekah had died by this time, and Isaac was not only blind, but completely incapacitated with age. Isaac died at the age of 180, and so he was probably about 153 years old when Jacob returned to Canaan. Now let's read verses 12 and 13. And he said, let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee. And he said unto him, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me, and if men should overdrive them one day, all the flock will die. So Isaac was still evidently living in Hebron, where he later died, and Esau assumed Jacob would be journeying on southward in that direction, so he offered to accompany him with the two companies traveling together. But Jacob declined this offer because it wasn't because he didn't trust Esau, but because he knew it would not be practical. Esau's band of armed men would be very impatient with the slow pace they would have to follow, desiring to get back home as soon as possible. There'd be kind of a conflict of interest here between the one group and the other as to how fast they would want to travel. Jacob's company would be having to travel very slowly. They had young children. They'd been under great strain in escaping from Laban. So the threat by Laban was now removed from them. And their next great threat was Esau. That threat's now removed. They had peace with Esau. And so they wanted to take it very easy for a time. So it wouldn't be practical for these two groups to be traveling together. And so Jacob said that that's not a good idea. Verse 14, he said, "Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me and the children be able to endure until I come unto my Lord in the Seir." Jacob assured Esau that they would follow him behind and would eventually see him again back in his own land of Seir. Jacob's children were all young. The oldest was probably not more than 12 years or so. And the animals were all but exhausted from their long trek from Paddan Aram. And many of them even were nursing their young. So the best thing was, you go ahead, Esau, and let me come at my own pace behind later. Verse 15 says, "And Esau said, Let me now leave with thee some of the folk that are with me. And he said, What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord." At this point, Esau offered to leave a part of his men with Jacob for protection. But Jacob assured him that even this was not necessary. His one concern had been Esau himself. Now that this fear had been removed, Jacob was now fully confident there would be no further obstacles in his way and his company would be perfectly safe. And though he did not say so, Jacob probably also realized that he should not remain too close and dependent upon Esau. As far as the future accomplishment of God's plans for his children were concerned, it'd be better for him to establish such a separation right now in the beginning. It was a great blessing and answer to his prayer to be reconciled to his brother, but they were still of different natures and had different ways of life and had different philosophies about life. They could, and no doubt did, continue to see each other frequently, but they must each live their own separate lives and to accomplish their own independent purposes. Jacob could not be tied too close to Esau as he fulfilled his purpose of guiding God's promised children. So verses 16 and 17 say, "So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth, and built him a house, and made booths for his cattle. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth." Esau, therefore, agreed to Jacob's request. He headed on back to Seir. Jacob also planned to continue south, but went much more slowly, actually stopping for a considerable period of time at both Succoth and Shechem. Succoth means booths, and it's probably the same place mentioned later in the book of Joshua, in Joshua 13:27, and in the book of Judges 8:5-16. It was still east of the Jordan, and probably north of Jabbok, in a plain where there was pasture for the flocks, and where they could rest a while to regain their strength. This was probably a fairly fertile area. It was an area of peace. They still hadn't got back into the land of Canaan yet. They were still east of the Jordan River, but it seemed like a good place to stay temporarily. So Jacob built these crude reed grass huts for the cattle and a simple house for himself until they were ready to continue on across the Jordan into the land of Canaan proper. Verse 18 says, "And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city." Jacob probably stayed longer in Succoth than he had originally anticipated doing, but he eventually moved on. All of his company finally pulled up stakes and headed westward across the Jordan River. After crossing the Jordan, they came to a valley near the city of Shechem, and there Jacob pitched his tent. This was not very far from Succoth, but it was definitely in the land of Canaan, and actually in the place where God had first appeared to Abram when he entered into the land in Genesis 12:6-7. The King James translation says that Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem. But most translators believe that Shalem, which means peace, should not be considered to be a proper name here. That is, the verse may mean that Jacob came in peace to the city of Shechem. If so, the verse may be regarded as a fulfillment of God's promises in Genesis 28:15 and 31:3. In 28:15, Jacob was told at Bethel, "And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." And in Genesis 31:3, when God told him to go back to Canaan, he simply says, "And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." So now God is with him. He's in this place of peace. And when we see that this verse is simply stating that Jacob came back into Canaan from Padan Aram, it could very well tie in with God's promises. This is the first spot in Canaan where Jacob set up an encampment. Verse 19 says, "And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money." So expecting that someday in the future his seed would inherit this whole land, he desired to purchase part of it right here, which would serve as a token of his confidence in God's future fulfillment of the complete promise. He would make his first capital right here. Furthermore, the plain was fertile and would make an excellent place for pasturing the flocks. He would also dig a well here in order to have an independent water supply. This well is not mentioned in Genesis, but is referred to in the New Testament in John 4:6, where Jesus came to this very same place and stopped at what was called Jacob's well. Shechem was a prominent city throughout biblical history, located on Mount Gerizim in what later became the territory of the tribe of Ephraim. It was very close to the future city of Samaria, which became the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. When Jacob arrived there, the city was controlled by the Hivites, a Canaanite tribe whose chieftain was a man named Hamor. Hamor had a son named Shechem, possibly named after the city in which they lived. It's also possible that the city was later named after Shechem, with Moses later inserting the name of the city here for editorial purposes. Jacob arrived peacefully at Shechem, and the Shechemites apparently welcomed him, thinking that the addition of such a prosperous man to their own community would simply add to their own prosperity. He soon arranged to purchase from Hamor and his sons a substantial tract of property for a goodly price, 100 pieces of silver. Much later, Jacob's favorite son Joseph would be buried on this same spot, Joshua 24:32. We must bring the lesson to a close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you. Just give me the strength to do every day what I have to do. Yesterday's gone, sweet Jesus, and tomorrow may never be mine. Lord, help me today, show me the way.